Well, good morning. How's everybody out there? Getting a late start here. 7:22 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's Radio Fishing. Fishing Frank in the chair and Robert in the chair next to me. And I gotta tell you, boys and girls, what a morning. I mean, left the house, and I didn't leave the house till around 7. I was goofing off, you know, lazy. You get old, you get lazy. And coming out, the sun's out a little bit, and you'd see the big storm front in front of me, and I stopped, took a picture of the front coming, and I thought, oh, that was pretty cool. And I made the swing, got up, came past I-75, and had all the windows in the truck open, and was coming in, you know, coming down Harborview Road, coming in, and all of a sudden it was like, uh-oh, wall of rain, pulling on buttons, and I mean, couldn't see out of the windshield for a couple of minutes, pulled all the, got the windows up, got the wipers on, and cruised in, you know, and it's weird, but it is wintertime. It shouldn't be perfect,
no,
really, you know. Oh, you need some volume, don't you?
Yep,
let me get rid of these other ones. I had Captain DeWayne and Warren in here the other day. We did one.
There you go.
I had to
readjust everything.
Yeah, you, when you're not here, it's, you know, that.
I know, I get shoved off to the side and turned off.
Yeah, you turned off. No, it's just more about, you know, when I'm running all the mics, everything picked. It's weird about a microphone because you're sitting right in front of it, 3 inches in front of this thing, and it hears the air conditioner across the room better than it does you.
Now you know what people with hearing aids feel.
Oh, I already know. I've tried it. I actually went and tried a hearing aid. You know, I'm so dang deaf now, you know, so yeah. I was going to, but I can hear everything everywhere else. You can't hear the guy across from me.
Yeah.
Hearing aids suck.
Yeah, I know. I was talking with my aunt about it the other day.
Yeah.
We went to dinner for Grandma's 88th birthday, and she wanted to sit in the center so she can kind of gather the conversation. She ended up getting pushed down to the end. And I'm like, so, what'd you do? You ended up turning off your hearing aid and had some more cocktails, just ignored everybody because you couldn't hear squat except for the cook in the back room smashing stuff. She's like, yeah, pretty much. I'm like, okay.
I get that. Because everybody out front, once everybody starts talking, I'm done.
Yeah.
I can't do it anymore.
It just comes in from every angle. And
yeah, because I have a hard time picking direction. And it's one of the reasons I don't think, even if I want to go back out and, you know, on the water, one of the things, I mean, I could always hear that fish doing something.
Right.
And when I lost all that hearing, it's too hard to pick direction.
Yeah.
That's the weird part, because the one ear only has like 40%, the other ear has like 70%. But with the imbalance, everything always sounds like it's on my right side.
Right.
You know, it was over there. No, it was over there.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, but yeah, the weather, just nasty, but kind of, I don't know, weirdly invigorating.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but driving in with the rain and the cold and all that stuff coming in, it was oddly invigorating, and it shouldn't have been. It should have just been depressing, but it actually was oddly invigorating. Don't know why.
Because you watch the news and go, wow, am I really lucky that I'm not up there. I don't wish it upon any of them, but I'm so glad I live here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got this one weird morning going to happen, and it's pretty much gone. But
you know, they're up there scrambling just like we do when a hurricane's coming. Get all the canned foods, get all this, get that. The only difference is they're getting, like, down comforters and
oh yeah, I mean, you got to have the generator running, you got to have this, but I mean, it can literally get life and death with the cold weather and the snow and all that. And you know, I think that's one of the problems that nobody teaches kids, and I got a whole ration of at the last boat show, I mean, guys were coming up going, Frank, what's this with the ranting on the show? I mean, you're just ranting. What the heck's wrong with you? I said, diabetes. You know, I have the radiation treatments to the brain, and prior to that, the other things with my brainwave patterns and all that other crap. So I've got, yes, I do have many emotional, physical malformations in the brain. So, been established for many years. I just ain't quite right. So,
legitimate doctor's notes. Yeah, it's just not theoretical.
I have a note from my doctor. Yes, he is nuts. You know, who else would run a store like this? You know, but I'm looking at, I went on fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, click the radar button to get a nice picture of the radar, because I link right to, the NOAA radar, and we got a line coming across, and we're just, the main boundary just came across, now we're in for some light rain, but it's moving fast. They said it'd be out of here by noon. I'm tending to believe them. I mean, it's really cooking.
Yeah.
Really going across. And we could use that little bit of rain. But now I got to mow my lawn again. Yeah. I got to mow the grass.
Crazy part is we're getting a little bit of rain here, but all that rain they got on Friday up there in Orlando and the whole center part of the state, Gainesville.
I wasn't paying attention. They got a lot of rain.
Oh, they got like... I'm going to have to, if I had to guess, because I don't know the exact number, but they probably got a few inches of rain on Friday.
Good for them.
That whole center. Well, but here's the thing. It's going to affect us because of the Peace River.
Oh, yeah. All that water's coming our way.
You know, I mean, you looked at it a couple weeks ago, and it was at, what, 3 foot or something.
I'll check it now.
2.5, 3 feet, which was surprising, because normally this time of year, it's about 1.5 feet, maybe 2 foot.
Okay. I went to... Weather and Tides, fishandfranks.com, Weather and Tides. Click the Peace River button, and scrolling down the bottom, the first graph is about flow per minute. Ooh, big spike. Yeah, it's already on its way. If there's 2 feet of water in Arcadia or less, I mean, 2 feet's about your, we get a little bit of water coming in. It's a nice little bit of fresh water coming down. At 1 foot in Arcadia, there's no water coming to us.
Right.
It doesn't make it across the gravel bars. Somewhere between 1 foot and 2 foot is where it starts coming. But once it's over 2 foot, it had gone down to just a little bit below 3 foot, like a 2.8, which was still 8-inch sheet of water coming down to us. And now it's up over 4, almost 5 foot.
Wow.
What is this? Something must have broke up there. Because it went from 4 foot straight down to zero. The meter must have broke.
The meter broke.
I think the meter broke because it was almost, it was 4.5, little over 4.5 feet in Arcadia yesterday, and then it just took a nosedive straight down to zero. Somebody must have hit the sensor. Yeah, somebody hit the sensor or something. Yeah, because it just went straight to zero. So we're not going to be sure, but we have a good 3 feet of water coming down the Peace River, and the water that rained there yesterday won't get to us. Takes 1 day, almost 2 days to get to us.
Yeah.
So it takes a good couple of days, so yeah. And they're getting more up there. So, I mean, the rain's much thick, much heavier, much broader spaced up around Orlando than it is us. Okay, so, yeah, the weird part about it, when you're fishing and when you're looking at Charlotte Harbor, you don't really look at the rain that falls on the harbor.
Yeah.
Because what rains here in Port Charlotte or Englewood or whatever, I mean, that's trying to dilute the Gulf of Mexico. It's not going to happen. It doesn't make a bit of difference.
Right.
Unless we get like 6-8 inches of rain, then we'll get a little surface flow to the water. But it doesn't take long to get rid of that. But when you go up the Peace River, the Myakka River, the Coosahatchee, all three major rivers, all of them close, at least 100 miles long. And I think the Myakka is only 80-some miles long. But let's say all three of them are about 100 miles long. That's a lot of water. When you get rain all along 100 miles of river.
Yeah.
All that pushes down and hits at the same time. That's when it changes salinity and turns it into brackish. And I'm holding my hands up doing that weird 1980s quotation thing, brackish water. Because brackish water doesn't exist in the eyes of the Marine Patrol. You either have salt water or fresh water. We get people say, well, it's brackish. What do I need to get? That's salt water.
Right.
That's just salt water diluted by runoff. And... then having said that, that's a stupid statement. It's ridiculous. What the heck's wrong with me? Because they do have, in intentional zones, the Peace River, the Myakka River, and the Coosahatchee are brackish zones where right. They're intentional. There's no boundary line that says you have to have a freshwater or saltwater license. But there is a law saying you have to have a license for the appropriate fish you're catching.
Correct.
So how stupid is this? Years ago, 761 was the dividing point. Right. If you were this side of 761, you had to have a saltwater license. The other side, you had to have a freshwater license. Now, you could, you know, it's, but now, if you're up there and you catch a bass, and you've got a saltwater license, you're snook fishing, you catch a bass, and then you cast back in that area, you know, hoping to catch a snook and catch another bass, you have to leave. You have to leave that spot. Otherwise, you're intentionally fishing for a bass, which requires a freshwater license.
That's weird how that works.
And if you're upriver, like, let's say it's 760 or Fort Ogden Trestle or one of these, and you're there with a freshwater license, and you catch a snook while you're bass fishing, and then you catch another snook in that spot while you're bass fishing, you have to leave that spot because if you stay there, now you're intentionally fishing for snook, and that requires a saltwater license.
Doesn't make any sense.
But it's the law.
No, I get it.
I mean, you know, so...
But all laws make a lot of sense.
I have to quit saying this whole brackish water thing doesn't exist, because it does exist on the Coosa-Hatchee, the Peace, and the Micah Rivers, because they're not dammed off. Every other creek, river, ditch... If it crosses U.S. 41, it has to have a dam on it. Keep the salt water from intruding up into the freshwater. Now, the dams could be on a little more. When you get north of 776, some of the dams are over toward additional dams in the canal system. But there is also another dam up by 41. So, but we're going to go freshwater fishing today, me and my dad.
There you go.
Yeah, we're going to go up. We're going to Shell Creek. Now, I've been talking to a bunch of guys, and the catfish are hitting good up there. Butter cats and big, you know, blue cats. I don't know.
Which channel cats.
Yeah. We've got some really nice freshwater catfishing here. And what they're telling me is, now on Prairie Creek, there's some 18, 20-foot holes on the bends of some of those rivers up there in Prairie Creek.
Really?
Now, I haven't fished Prairie Creek. You and I are going to go do this. But we got to get the porter boat out of the top. Because I know I could get the little skiff in the water. I don't think I'd get it back out there.
Right.
So we'll grab the porter boat and go up there.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, we're going to grab the porter boat and go up there. Terry bought. It's a 10-foot fold-up boat. So she had to have it. Luckily, the guy gave me a deal on it. I mean, it was half regular price because it was their demo model and all the rest of that stuff.
Right.
But because they're not cheap. They're not real expensive, but they're not cheap. And cheaper than the darn half the kayaks, and definitely cheaper than the paddleboards.
Right.
And you can fold it up. It's the size of a paddleboard.
Right.
You know, so, but you sit in it. It's a nice little 10-foot boat. I put it in the water and sat in it. And actually, good little boat. I mean, with two people, I usually don't think of a 10-foot boat and two people, but you could easily put... two people in it, three you could fish out of. You could fish it with three people and not be terrified. You know, my 8-foot boat, two people in that's terrifying. But this 10-foot is pretty cool. Anyway, but they say those catfish are laying in those holes. Now, the trick to it is to find where the hole is and get up current from it. And then not cast into the hole, but right on the edge of the hole, and try and get the bait to kind of roll down the bank into the hole a bit. They don't seem to be all the way down on the bottom of the hole, but they're not up on the shallows either.
Kind of hanging right along the edge of it.
Hanging on the edge of the holes. So that's pretty cool. So we're going to take some night crawlers. I'm going to take some of that Berkeley gulp blood bait for right. The catfish. You know what we're out of?
What's that?
The dough ball hooks. The treble hooks with the springs on them.
Are we really?
We're out of them. I looked all over yesterday because I want to go catfishing, and we are definitely going to reset this freshwater section because I think Dad's going to want to do a lot of freshwater this year. So we're going to definitely reset this freshwater. So got to start paying a lot more attention to that. So I don't know how we're going to do that, along with everything else.
All right. We'll get right on that after March.
So anyway, we just talked about Shell Creek. There's catfish. There's some bass. Most of the bass I'm hearing about up there is at 2-pound range. We'll find out today.
Right. I'm going to take... been some decent bluegill up there. Not giants, but a bluegill bite's been on pretty okay up there, too, from what I've been hearing.
Yeah, I want to take some yum dingers. I'm trying to pick because I like the browns and the greens, but we're out of those. So I'm trying to decide pink, blue, or the bright chartreuse green. I don't know.
I'd probably go with the blue.
I'm thinking about the blue. I don't know.
I like that little darker color. Just in general. I mean, if it's one of my choices.
Yeah.
And plus, I'm terrible with chartreuse or bright greens. I have no confidence in it.
Well, even though it's chartreuse, it ain't no use.
I
mean, you know,
it crushes fish. A lot of guys catch them, but I can't.
No confidence yet. I get it. All right. Well, we're up in the Peace River. What are we seeing up there? I haven't been on the Peace River to look. Have you heard anything?
I've heard mixed reports up there. Basically, up there around the power lines, the trout have been still kind of steady. A lot of little trout, some silver trout, few whiting, and then still some juvenile tarpon up there.
If it was me, I would be doing the Storm Twitch, the small one, the big one, Rapala X-Wrap, a rattle trap. Probably the best thing to do would be a combination of a quarter-ounce rattle trap, maybe even a half-ounce on one side, and either Storm Twitch or Shad Wrap on the other side. And that would be kind of my scenario, because the neighbors that I have heard about talking up there, going up there looking for the trout, but there seems to be as many in front of Harbor Heights as there is up by the power lines. In fact, when I hear it's probably a little better.
Probably.
You know, the radiation treatments, nothing kicked in until you started talking. I'm like, gee, I haven't heard a thing. Oh, yeah, wait a minute, I have. Duh. This is your Fishing Frank Fishing Report.
So. It takes a couple minutes. You haven't finished your cup of coffee yet.
That is true. Caffeine.
They're also getting a lot of gar up there, too, which are always just fun to catch. I mean, some guys love to eat them, but they're still just fun to catch.
The most major pain in the butt to clean I've ever heard of.
Not much fun to get off a hook, either.
No, the trick to get them off the hook is to grab the beak right where it joins the head.
Mm-hmm.
Grab their mouth right where it joins the head, grabbing the bottom and top jaw together.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like a northern pike, it's got a lot of little tiny sharp teeth. They're not exceptionally dangerous. You're not going to lose a finger or hand and get some pretty good infection out of a scratch from them, but that's about it.
Right.
But if you grab that beak right where it meets the head, if you grab it out further, you'll break the beak. So you got to grab it right by where it meets the head. And then once you've got that, you're pretty good in control of the fish. Take your hook out.
Right.
Little tip for getting a gar, don't try and grab them by the middle. They tend to flop around a lot. I get them right by the nose, right where the nose comes to the face.
Plus, they have that armor plating. I mean, those big keeled scales on them, you got to be careful grabbing them.
Oh, yeah.
That'll open you up.
Yeah, don't grab the middle of a gar with bare hands. If you grab them right by the nose, you're not in bad shape. But right where it meets the head, you don't want to break the bill off. Unless you're going to eat him, then break off whatever you want to break off. He's dead anyway.
Right.
You know, but if when you're going to release one of those big gar, and the small one's obviously easy to handle, but you get a 4-footer, you definitely want to maintain control of that fish, and that's the only way I've ever found to do it where it doesn't hurt you or the fish.
Right.
So... but I used to make a lot of money catching those things.
Well, they're fun to catch.
Well, you take somebody up, they catch a dinosaur.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's literally a dinosaur. I mean, that's some weird-looking fish up there. Coming down to 41, you heard anything?
A lot of ladyfish down there. Been some good-sized ladyfish, actually. The snooker stacked up all over around the lights at night, but they're not cooperating very well, but there's definitely abundance of them. A few juvenile tarpon. During the daytime, you got the mixture of the ladyfish, some whiting, few oddball trout. Some little baby drum have started to show back up. Those little 16 to like 20 inches.
Really?
Yeah.
That's always cool.
Yeah. Other than that, it's been kind of quiet.
All right. Port Charlotte canals?
The mouths of the canals by far are doing the best. Unless you get up there into the... Ackerman and Manchester Waterway, you know, that's doing a little bit better, but for the most part, the mouths of the canals are pretty much your best bet for mangs. Still some juvenile black drum. Been some trout right there at the entrances, just on the outside, more on the harbor's edge. A lot of little juvenile tarpon up there in East Spring Lake. That's about it.
Deep. That's all, folks. Okay. Yeah. And coming on,
make sure I wasn't hearing of something else consistently. You always hear of that oddball from one guy and then another oddball from another guy, but I'd like to personally, if I'm ever mentioning fish, it's usually because I've had several reports from several different people in the area. One fish doesn't really constitute banging them and worth mentioning.
Well, the one thing about it is, over across from Port Charlotte Beach, there's been some pretty consistent redfish. The mouth of the Ackerman and back behind the islands in the bay, pretty darn consistent up there in redfish. And I've been trying to think. Some guy told me, man, the redfish have been moved back into blank spot, and I can't remember what he said. He said he's been catching them steady there for a week. I think I need more radiation treatments. Shoot the brain again, Doc. There's still some left.
You don't need any more of that.
All right, let's see.
Over in the Mayaca, they're doing pretty okay.
What's going on in the Mayaca?
Right there in the cutoff, there's been some big snook have been real active this past week. Right at the mouths, there's been a few redfish and some trout. And then as you go around on the outside, on the Mayaca side itself, around Hog Island, there's still been a few bonnetheads. Not a great deal as there was a week ago. But scattered pompano, trout, a few redfish, even some decent sheep's head out there moving around on those grass flats. Up on the northern end, up towards Tippecanoe, that's where you're getting some bigger snook. A lot of little trout, some giant ladyfish up there too. And then over there by 776 here, El Jobin, off the trestles there and all around the trestles and the bridges, the trout bite's been decent. A lot of small trout, but good numbers. Sheep's head have still been hit or miss. The ones that they have been catching have been fairly good size. And then the mangs have been okay. You move up into the upper Mayaca. I've had a couple of reports this past week of some juvenile tarpon and some redfish. As you're working up just past the manatee signs there, as it gets into that slow area.
Right.
All the mouths of those canals at Gulf Cove and over on the Northport side have started to pick up a little bit more. Not up inside of them, but just right there at the entrances. And then if you work your way over towards Cattle Dock Point or go inside Cattle Dock Point, redfish, snook, bass fishing back in there has been really, really good as you get further back inside there in the South Gulf Cove area. Not too much that I've heard about on the bluegill, but definitely the bass have started to really, really perk up back in there. If you guys trolling through there, catching an incidental jack or an incidental tarpon along with their snook and bass.
So, all in all, pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's not gangbusters, but with this wind and weather and everything, it's worth going in those areas because you can get somewhat out of the wind, especially up there in, like, South Gulf Cove. There's a lot of protected areas back in there, and it's beautiful. It's something different.
Right.
Just because one cast is a bass, the next cast is a tarpon, the next cast is another bass, and then a snook. You know, it's just all over the place, which is cool.
Well, coming down the west side of the harbor, what's been going on in the west wall?
West wall's got a fair amount of redfish. It seems to have gotten a little quieter there for the numbers of redfish, but the quality's gone up just a bit. Hearing of some 16 to 20 inchers in there with the occasional bigger oversized red. A lot of little snook scattered throughout the whole thing. If you're drifting out on top of the bar there in like 3 to 4 feet of water from the radio tower south, that's where your better numbers of trout are at. A lot of small cobia. A few incidental pompano. Bonnet heads, black nose sharks, and some Atlantic sharp nose kind of mixed in out there too in like that 3 to 4, even 5 feet of water range. You know, key thing still, I mean, it's been pretty repetitive, is move a lot. You know, that one thing hasn't changed. You know, you don't want to sit and drop an anchor. And like you've always said, just because you dropped the anchor doesn't mean you're stuck there. Pick it up and move.
Yeah, it's amazing how once anchor goes down, it becomes, God put me here for a reason. No, you just dropped the anchor.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead and pick it up.
Such thing as free will.
Yes. I just put some pictures up. I'll add some more text to it on our blog of this morning's drive into work. You can see the storm clouds. They're a little out of order. Picture in the middle is the first shot I took, and then the second one, it was rapidly getting dark, and then the third one was me at the traffic lights this morning right across from the bait shop. But that's up on our blog. I'll add some text to it in a little while. So anyway, so you can see what it looked like on the way to work this morning. And I'm going to be writing an article for the Water Life this afternoon about my fishing trip with my dad this afternoon. So that's going to be good. Get on the water, work this morning, get on the water, fish with dad, come back, write the article, and I hope we catch a fish. So anyway, Cape Hayes.
You're going to have a busy day today.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Yeah, and it's a good busy.
Yeah. I got three magazines I got to be writing for after this because I'm taking over Greg's spot on the one and then adding another one in. So I've got to do, you know, at least 3-4 fishing trips a month just to keep up to the articles, you know.
Imagine that.
So it's going to be a little interesting, and all of them will be available on Frank's story page type thing, or one of them things. I don't know what I'm going to create for that, but I'll create something so you can see them all.
There you go.
Because what I write doesn't necessarily mean that's what they publish. You know, whenever we write for the magazines, newspapers, I forget how many we're in now, but it's always surprising because you read the article to see what you wrote.
Right.
Because you're never really sure, because you write out this whole article and you put pictures and everything with it, and then you go to read it to see how they actually, you know, put it in the publication, because they've always got to change it around. They add, delete, you know, use different words. They edit. And I guess
they got to make it fit.
Yeah, if it comes out of
their format, is they got to make it fit.
If it comes out of my brain, there's no telling what it was when it was on my paper. But you'll get to see the raw articles, not the polished versions.
There you go.
So, I don't know if the magazines will like that or not, but tough noogies didn't tell me not to write.
You know? Right.
Tough. So, anyway, but I won't put them on the website until after they're out in publication.
Right.
Let's see. We were at Cape Hayes. Did we talk about Cape Hayes?
Not yet.
Okay. Where were we?
Cape Hayes.
I'm confused.
We finished the West Wall.
Okay, we finished the West Wall, but Cape Hayes now. I've been hearing pompano and Spanish mackerel.
Pompano, Spanish mackerel, a few oddball blue.
You can disagree.
Nope. I agree with you.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
Sometimes it's easier, too.
Yeah, I mean, you're just messing with me now. This is just not right this early in the morning. Now you're just screwing with me. I agree with you, Frank. Really?
No,
okay.
I agree with that.
All right, Cape Hayes. We are getting there, folks.
Some pompano, some bluefish, some Spanish mackerel, bonnet hens, black nose, Atlantic sharp nose. They're kind of scattered throughout the whole thing.
I'm sorry. I'm just sitting here thinking, yeah, you can do it. Stir fried, fried, boiled. I don't know why. I always found that to be the most embarrassing movie in the world, but got to tell you, still one of the, I mean, talk about well put together. That was funny as heck. And that America took, no wonder the people like me. They like Forrest Gump. They thought Forrest Gump was great. No wonder they like me. I just figured it out.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
I'm like, Forrest is a weird cousin.
Jeez.
God. Okay, we did the mackerel, we did the sharks. If you go up in front of Turtle Bay, there's some nice snook just outside of the bar. Mm-hmm. You got a little bit of smaller stuff inside. Hard to get them to hit.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing people seeing tons of snook and just lockjaw.
Yeah, they haven't been cooperative at all.
I mean, I've talked to Matt Haig and Rhett and Danny and Carl and Kale and and you know, a list of the captains that go on, and they are catching some snook.
Not for the numbers they're seeing, though.
But yeah, it's like, what? I mean, there's a lot of fish, and they're just not biting.
Yeah, nobody's been. Well, and I think it relates to that water temperature thing, and they're just they don't know what they want to eat from one day to the next, or whether they should eat from one day to the next, especially with these fronts, the way they keep coming through, you know.
Is it possible to give fish radiation treatments?
Probably.
I got to tell you, they seem a little too much like me. Just don't have a freaking clue right now, and they're not sure what they're going to do or how they're going to eat or what's happening next, and it's right. just making me nuts. Let's go inside a turtle bay. A lot of trout drift into flats.
A lot of trout out there. Nothing really major size-wise, but there is definitely a lot of trout in there. A lot of scattered redfish mixed in with those trout as you're drifting over those flats.
Bigger ones out there seem to be hiding in that little deeper water with the trout.
Yeah.
And I've heard some stories of guys drifting with trout, just shrimp or a white bait or whatever they have on below the bobber, and all of a sudden a 30-inch redfish just whacks them. So, I don't know. That's got to be interesting. Big lady fish back there. Excuse me.
Big lady fish. There's been some bluefish moving in through there, too. A couple of guys have hooked some decent bluefish.
Why 18, 20 inch?
Yeah.
Like big for here, small for up north.
Yeah. I mean, very big for here, really. But up on those flats, you know, in that 2 to 4 feet of water, you just don't expect to get a bluefish in there, you know. And
I get it.
You know, I've had probably three different guys come in and either show me a picture or tell me about the ones that they hooked or have been just flat out bit off.
Yeah.
You know, you're not expecting it. So all of a sudden, hey, bobber sinks for a second, and then you reel it up, and there's nothing there.
I think the only thing you can do is if you go to about 40-pound leader instead of the 20, 25 you're using on the trout, switch up to about a 40, or even put come down with some leader and then put about a 4 to 6 inch little cheap stainless, you know, one of those little snap swivel leader things, right. little steel leader steel things leader. With the little snappy thing on it.
Right.
Bluefish don't seem to care about that. So, you know, at least you'll find out what's cutting you off, whether it's a small shark, because there's bonnet sharks. Even back there, you're going to find a couple of the sharp nose, the bonnets, all that. There's a you'll find some little sharks back there. So in order to figure out which one it is cutting you off, add just that little 6-inch steel leader to the bottom. They're not going to bite more than 6 inches. You know, they're not going to overbite more than six.
Not usually.
And just those little cheap, like the Berkeley or the Angler's Choice or whatever they are, the little, you know, the swivel steel snap. Tie that on the end of the leader, put your hook on the snap, go for it, because none of them are shy about that.
Nope.
It's not going to hurt your fish, so you'll be fine if you get cut off a couple times. But we got kind of the same scenario up in Bull Bay, a little more redfish around the backside of Bull Bay, and seen a lot of snook towards the backside going up by the clam leases and stuff. And right out by the under the houseboats, we got some sheephead, we've got a few Goliath grouper. I was going to say Jewfish, but that wouldn't be right. And then coming around, going on the backside of Kaopalu, the haunted island. I don't want to be politically incorrect, you know.
I know.
It could hurt somebody's feelings.
It just might. Wow.
Oh, yeah, that's going to hurt me.
You're worried about that.
Yeah. No, I'm not. If you're that sensitive, you're listening to the wrong freaking program.
Right.
I mean, good God, take a joke. All right. I mean, if whatever supreme deity you believe in, look around the world and look at a duck-billed platypus. And if you don't think a supreme deity has a sense of humor, guess again. And I don't care which one you believe in. Because, you know, to me, it's just different names for all the same thing.
Right.
So, anyway, going back on to that, the flats out in front of Kaopalu.
That's been amazing. Pretty productive. Yeah. That's been good for a mixed variety of stuff. And I think
white bait.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I think it's because that there's so much scattered white bait and pinfish throughout that whole flat.
I'm reading your mind.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
You have now entered the Twilight Zone.
The Frank Zone.
Yes. It's not quite twilight. It's actually pretty friggin' dark in here. Okay.
Nice.
All right. Going down that flat. They call the tailing flats the area from about Devilfish working down the other way towards Placida, behind the sandbar along that eastern side of the intercoastal there. And the tailing flats in part of Gasparilla Sound actually been pretty productive for as far as redfish, trout,
Ladyfish, some mangrove snapper even hanging out in some of those little deeper pockets. Not numbers, but just a few incidentals here and there. Even the sheep's head have moved up in there, like up in Whidden Bay around some of those little oyster patches that are throughout there. And along the bushes, some of those just little bit of pockets that are underneath the mangroves where it's just a little deeper, there's been some fairly good sheep's head. So it's kind of a good mixed variety of stuff. You know, it's been shallow for the most part, but you get into the little deeper areas and you're finding pretty good concentrations of just general fish.
Gotcha. So, and that brings us, you know, Catfish Creek and Whidden Creek, I'm hearing mixed reports, nothing spectacular, but the guys who are in there, I think if you have a lot of knowledge of the place and you really understand how to fish it, the fishing's good.
Yeah.
If you're going in there and you're just doing your first Lewis and Clark through the area, gotta tell you, you better be lucky because, you know, if not, it takes several trips up in there to figure it out.
Oh, at least.
Because you got to know when to stop and when to cast at the little tiny holes and the little depressions. But you got to do it before you get there. You can't do it once you're there.
Yeah.
And
so many guys buzz in and out of there because there are so many little shallow spots that you really need to know when to stop ahead of time to cast your spots before you get right on top of it. Because those fish get spooky real quick.
Good fishing, but, you know, it takes an extreme amount of time to learn it. It's if you're one of those really, really lucky people and you're just going to go in there and, you know, throw and catch a fish because that's the way it works for you, you'll be good. But if you're like me, you're going to have to take several trips in there and spend a lot of time sticking your rod tip in the water.
It'll pay off. It's worth it. I mean, taking the time to learn it. I mean, you don't just go in there a couple times and say to heck with it and move on to somewhere else. That's one of those places, once you do learn it, it will pay off in dividends.
Because, I mean, there's some great
fishing in there. Just,
but you have to invest
a lot of time into it.
And you need an electric motor, you need a push pole, and you need both. You're not going to get in there with one or the other. You want an electric motor, you want a push pole. And, you know, it's a lot of money because, you know, you've got several hundred dollars or $1,000 on an electric motor. You got $250 or $300 or plus in a push pole. So it's not a cheap investment, but in the long run, you'll have some amazing, amazing days. But you really got to take your time and learn it.
Absolutely.
Now, coming back out, going to Placida, anything going on the opposite side of the intercoastal there, on the Gaspereau Island side?
On the Gaspereau Island side, most of that's pretty sneak, you know, pretty shallow to get into. If you're drifting the grass flats, there's a lot of little trout out there, some bonnet heads, a few other scattered sharks with some Spanish. But if you are able to sneak up there and get closer to that whole back side of Boca Grande from the,
if you can get
off
up where
course
the docks
going
are.
North, you know, going north, a lot of sheep's head, some juvenile black drum, snook, redfish, trout, ladyfish, kind of a mixed variety of stuff.
Yeah, I was hearing a lot more about the black drum, small black drum moving up in there. A lot of fun hooking them underneath the docks because they're very individualistic because one will come to the boat and you'll be like, yeah, what's the big deal about these? And the next one, exact same size fish, everything, just has an attitude.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they will rip line and drag you into the pilings and, I mean, they'll try and snap your rod on you. And
yeah,
it's the exact same size fish. It's 20-inch fish. And one of them you reel in and you know, gee, what's the big deal about catching black drum? And then the next one, they just try and destroy you.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, moving up to Placida. Hey, Captain.
Good morning.
It was Kale coming by.
I almost didn't see him.
Yeah, it looks like a floating head.
All camouflage.
Little fire agent going by. I don't care. You can join in.
Go ahead.
Well, up at Placida, what's going on around Placida?
Placida, there's a lot of mangrove snapper moved back in. Nothing really of size, but good numbers. The ladyfish have been doing real good. Sheep's head. Some big, big pinfish. I mean, like,
eight, nine-inch
pinfish.
Wow.
Bluefish, Spanish mackerel.
Rainbow grunts.
Okay, and we have Captain Kale joining us. Okay. Yes. Kale.
Thank you. Easy. Just, got a show to do.
Just like the lettuce, only different. So
she made a comment as she walked out.
I heard what it was, but
there was some kind of shot fired. It always is.
You guys aren't in the hallway intercourse, are you?
I don't know. It.
The third stage.
Something goes on because every time she walks by me, she mumbles something under her breath.
Okay.
I'm out.
Yeah, Ted. All right. We're all going right, all the way up to Lemon Bay.
Just to get away from this.
Passing by. The one thing that's been going on is the sheephead bite's really gone big.
Yeah, sheep's heads started to pick back up considerably.
I have no idea. I mean, the months no should have been great. I mean, we should have been just knocking them dead in November, nothing. December, January.
Water temperature. We're starting to get down towards 60.
It's still pretty warm, though.
Yeah, well, it's cooling down right now. I mean, the last few days are getting colder, but it started right before that.
Yeah, like the last 10, 12 days we've been hearing.
I think they waited for the cold and waited for the cold and waited for the cold and just got tired of waiting and said, okay, we're going to do this.
Yep.
Yeah. Commit already.
Yeah. Betty, get your fins over here.
It's like the guy driving down 41 that goes down to 20 miles an hour. Am I going to turn here or the next one? Just commit and turn and get out of the way.
Yeah.
Are we going to move off the reef and come inside or not? Let's go.
And I will tell you, it has nothing to do with age. When you're looking at, I think a lot of the older people, the older drivers, think you're talking about them just because you're talking about a bad driver. Well, I think that's guilt.
Yeah, it's one of those if the it's shoe guilt fits things.
Because I run across, I'm following this kid up, and I mean, in his early 20s, you know, you can see the earbuds in. And he's got the text going on, and we're doing 25 miles an hour in, which probably means it's one of the reasons I actually think that all cars should come equipped with a marijuana injection system into the car. That way, everybody be driving around at 5 to 10 miles an hour, you know, and if you ran into Joe, you know, they can take a 5-mile-an-hour impact.
Sorry,
yeah. But I'm kind of thinking that's what was going on there because there was just no sense of hurry whatsoever.
Right.
And coming up the one street, let's look at, no, that wasn't it. All right, let me check the next one. No, that wasn't it. You know, it's both ends of the spectrum. I don't think there's an age on this bad driving thing.
No. There's two types of drivers in Florida. Those that don't use their turn signals and those that don't turn them off.
On the first one. You know, I do use them more at this time of year. In the summer, I don't really use them that much because
there's nobody here.
Nobody cares. You know, I hit the brake lights. Now, if I hit the brake lights because a car in front of me is turning and I'm just going to stop, now, is that less effective than when I hit the brake lights, put my blinker on, and zip around the corner without changing speed?
It all depends if the person behind you can see past their hood ornament or not.
So anyway, yeah, I'm a lousy driver. I drive slow. Slow driver, yes. I get behind the wheel, and I just want to relax and enjoy the trip. You know, to me, it's my time off. Sitting behind the wheel of a car, I don't think of it as the bad part of the day. I get to relax. Turn on the radio.
You get behind the wheel, and you take a lot of time off.
See? I'm telling you right now. I mean, if it's 45 mile an hour speed zone, I'm going to be somewhere between 40 and 50.
It's time off our itinerary. It's time off our arrival time. Lots of time off.
Yes, well, I blame the radiation, the diabetes, the birth defects, the brainwave pattern problems, all those things. We've already assessed. At least I'm good. I have a doctor's note saying, yes, you are nuts.
That's good.
See? So, you know, like going into school. You get out of recess because you have a doctor's pass.
Right.
So, anyway, Lemon Bay.
Lemon Bay.
Basically. For the guy who's nuts, I'm the only one trying to keep us on track here.
Yeah, you're doing a good job.
But you also notice he's the one that takes us off, too.
You had to bring it up. You couldn't let it alone.
He even drives the radio show slow.
Wonderful. Lemon Bay, please.
The ends of the docks have got some trout on them. Underneath all the docks, there's been some sheep's head, few oddball whiting even. That's about it on the ends of the docks. Not hearing of anything super, super consistent as far as redfish or snook goes. As you move up closer towards Stump Pass, bigger whiting, quite a few more sheep's head, even still some juvenile black drum over there too. A few oddball incidental flounder that I'm still hearing about. Spanish mackerel starting to pop up a little bit. Not anything where you can actually target them, but enough where there's a few around where it's worth, you know, keeping your eyes out and being prepared for it. The bonnet heads, a little other sharks moving around. Basically just kind of move a lot. The trout have been right at the ends of the docks, like I said, but they've also been out in some of the deeper sand holes. Ski alley along the edges there, just where it starts to drop off. Weekends are always terrible in there because of all the boat traffic, but during the weekdays it's usually a little quieter and you can get just drift right along the edges there and some better trout.
Okay, now if we come out through Stump Pass, let's do a walk down the beaches. If you're going to walk the beaches, is there much of a difference between Minnesota, Gasparilla, Sanibel? Is it fairly constant up and down the shoreline?
It's been fairly consistent. I mean, the closer you get to any of the passes, obviously it's been picking up more and more with any varieties of fish. But the flounder have been spotty throughout there. A lot of little jacks. Few whiting. Trying to think what else. Quite a few flounder.
Flounder's the one I'm hearing about.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been scattered up and down throughout the whole thing, but mainly closer to the passes for consistency. Not right in the passes, but definitely as you get closer to them, it seems like as that water or the riptides move in there, it seems to be pulling that water a little faster. And with the scattered amounts of white bait that there is out there, along with the juvenile baby, little, I call them finger whiting, just a little like 2 to 4 inch whiting that are out there.
Great bait.
They start getting sucked into those passes and moving around all that area. That seems to get everything kind of excited.
Okay. Just double checking. One of the reasons I was asking is 72.9 degrees water temperature in Key West. Naples is 74.8 and St. Petersburg is 68.2. Puts us in prime king mackerel territory, which is our next step going out into the Gulf. What's right. going on in the Gulf? I mean, I'm hearing a few kings, but we're right in that prime temperature.
Yeah.
We got Spanish mackerel and bonita, a few kings, and those are starting from about 10 to 20 miles out.
Right.
Now, everything I'm hearing about grouper-wise, if you can get out 60 feet of water, you're going to do pretty good.
Right.
One of my recommendations is, head west, northwest. And the water's staying chillier down there. Obviously, it's north. But it's kind of neat right now. 69, 70, 72, 4 to 5 degree variance between St. Pete and Naples.
Right.
And
which isn't a whole lot, really.
No.
For that amount of distance scattered.
But it's 73 to 68. From Key West to St. Pete, so
right.
It's actually
the weird part is I'm not hearing of the killer numbers of kings down in the Keys either.
I haven't heard killer numbers except for about a month or two ago.
Yeah,
but right now you got a decent shot, but more bonita. If you get out a little further, I'm hearing more and more reports of mahi-mahi.
Mm-hmm.
30-35 miles out, starting there and going out past that. The mahi-mahi, the blackfin, I haven't heard of any sales yet or anything, but...
No, but they, wouldn't surprise me at all if they were out there.
it's so weird because on this coast, we're pushing out 35, 40 miles to get into what you find a mile and a half. I'm talking to Matt Haig, you go out a mile and a half off the Atlantic, or, up the Atlantic side of Florida, and you're in 600 feet of water.
Right.
And here, it's funny, to get to 600 feet of water, it's almost exactly the same distance if you drove across the state or drove out towards the, out into the Gulf. It's about the same thing there. So, anyway, going on, grouper, 60 feet of water, really doing well.
Yeah. Also out there, there's been some decent trigger fish, oddball, amberjack at some of the different reefs out there. A few little incidental cobia, nothing really super major, but definitely a few to catch out there. The mangrove, the lanes, and the grunts have all been doing incredible. I mean, and all the way out to as far as 30 miles, but you don't even need to travel that far right now. 5 to 12 miles is phenomenal. I mean, really, really good numbers of all the little bottom reef fish. You know, so if you just want to go out and bend a rod on some lighter tackle and also get some pretty good grub, you know, you don't need to run too far at all for them. There's also been some triple tail scattered out there on some of the buoys. Still not any great numbers, but been a few better quality fish being seen. Couple guys catching some 6 to 10 pounders out there. And then also as you get out there around that 10 to 15, even 20 mile mark, been still big black tips, a few big sandbars, the occasional bull shark, kind of a mixed variety of some larger sharks and some smaller ones too.
So, yeah, it was, you know, fishing in the Gulf this year has been much more consistent.
Yes, it has.
And yeah. I've been doing a lot of checking and research. And I get my little white coat on, I put my spectacles on, and I hang the cigarette out of the corner of my mouth so the smoke runs in my eyes and makes them all red. And
pocket
I read,
protector?
I put on my pocket protector and I read and read and read. 33 feet of seawater equals 1 atmosphere.
We oh, there you
14.7 pounds of PSI where we are standing right now. The further you get up in the mountains, the less air pressure you have on you, but at sea level it's about 14.7.
Yep.
If you go down 33 feet, you double that.
Right.
And then if you get down 66 feet, you triple that. Every 33 feet, it
that's another adds atmosphere.
Adds another atmospheric pressure, another 14.7 pounds per square inch. So that's why I think inside in the harbor, we've been hit and miss, because the pressure changes in the atmosphere so quickly, it changes that, you know, it gives very significant, rather slight, but significant for a fish, pressure changes to the water. But the deeper you go, the less those pressure changes hit.
Less that affects them?
Less that affects them. Because when you're in our atmosphere and up to 33 feet, you're in that first atmospheric stages. Mm-hmm. Once you get past 33 feet, you've added another atmosphere, and you're not going to feel those effects. But that's why in the 3, 4, 5 feet of water, 2 feet of water we fish in, most of the time, we get such a dramatic front effect.
I like it.
Yeah, that extra half a pound of pressure doesn't mean a whole lot when you're already sitting at 42 PSI, but when you're at 14 and a half,
right,
it's a big difference.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, and you know, people feel it in their ears. Some people are very susceptible. Drive a Toyota truck with the rear window down sometime. You will feel the extra half a pound of effect. I mean, it will literally blow your head apart. What a piece of crap. Yeah, my Toyota's a great truck, unless you happen to leave one of the back windows down. And then it starts...
I've noticed that
oh God,
it seems to be prevalent in foreign cars. Yeah. I have no problem rolling down one window in my Avalanche.
And
but you do it in Barb's car, the Hyundai, and oh my God. It'll almost get you sick.
Yeah, your ears, you can feel the vibration. It's like sitting in a rock concert. Yeah, I don't know what it is about them, but they...
So if you ever want to feel what a fish feels...
I'll tell you what,
if you want to feel what a fish feels,
I will put you in backseat of my Toyota. I will drive 45 miles an hour down the road with my rear windows down. You will not want to eat either, I promise you.
Just one rear window.
Yeah, no, both of them work good too. Doesn't matter.
Really?
As long as those front windows are closed, it will literally explode your head. I would have to be very careful, because if I got you up to 50, 55, I bet you I could wreck an eardrum. Seriously. Yeah. The Toyota's wonderful in a lot of ways. I mean, don't get me wrong. And when I first sat in it, I thought, how uncomfortable is this? But when you ride, when I sat in my Dodge, it was the most comfortable feeling I'd ever felt. It just perfectly fit your body. It was so wonderful. But I'd drive to Tampa, get out, and I couldn't walk for 10 or 15 steps. I can drive 6 hours in that Toyota and get out, and I'm fine. And I don't know why what's comfortable to sit in isn't comfortable to stay in.
Right.
You know?
It's because those Dodge seats are like a park bench, and he has no ass. It's like setting one board on top of another board. It fits pretty well.
Nice.
It's exactly the opposite. The Toyota is no padding, really. With the Dodge, you had the big padding on the seat, and then the sides came up, and it just kind of hugged and conformed. I mean, the padding was probably 4 or 5 inches thick, but I have no idea why. But no, it's actually just the opposite. When you sit in a Toyota, it feels like you're sitting on a board. And with my bony butt, yeah, it's like, geez. Anyway, going back on, coming back up inside, let's swing down and hit Ponarasa, you know, the area down there.
As you're going through Redfish Pass and all around the causeway there, there's been quite a few sheep's head. A lot of trout mixed in through there on the grass flats and near the passes. Been some, a lot of snapper mixed in those passes and on those deeper sand holes. The redfish have been real scattered all over the place. There's some decent ones down there, but they are scattered all over. Sand holes up underneath the big mangroves, underneath some of the docks. Kind of a mixed variety of stuff. The docks over there around Ponarasa, a lot of sheep's head underneath them. Some decent mangrove snapper. Big ladyfish, just like what's going on in the harbor. I mean, it seems like there's bigger ladyfish all over the place right now. Some jacks have been doing fair down in there, hearing some better reports this last 2 weeks in general on jacks. Last year it was a lot of those little, you know, half to 2 pounders. This year it seems to be the jacks that the people are running into are that 4 to 6 pound range. So definitely getting a little bit better quality on the jacks, which is kind of cool.
Just something a little different. Coming around the outside of Pine Island, between Pine Island, Captiva, and all that, the intercoastal, and Pine Island Sound, what's going on out there?
You're talking like Captiva Rocks, all that area?
Yeah, they're all the way that whole, from, let's just kind of broad generalize with intercoastal, let's start along what's going in the intercoastal. I haven't heard anything special out of Redfish Pass anything lately, but through the intercoastal, anything in there?
Spanish mackerel are scattered throughout there with some decent bluefish, a lot of bonnet heads and other small little sharks. Then the trout have been pretty consistent in that 3 to 6 feet of water range, especially as you get to some of those nicer deep sand holes. If there's a little bit of oyster patches around, that seems to be a little bit more consistent for some sheep's head and trout. Underneath the bushes there where you got all those deep, deep troughs, there's mangroves, some redfish, a few pompano, kind of a mixed variety of stuff. I mean, fishing down in the Sound has been pretty steady.
And I would suspect there's probably starting to get some good black tips in that area. This is usually the time of year when they start coming in through those spoil areas in between Patricio and the fish shacks down there.
Yeah.
And now coming up around Jug Creek Shoals, what's going on up there?
That's probably definitely the more consistent fishing there. Again, that's like devilfish. You know, there's been such a variety of stuff over there from Jug Creek going all the way around to Boquilla to those bars out there, that all those flats there and those little shoals and even the few little oyster patches closer to Jug Creek. You know, there's pompano, a few incidental flounders, some sheep's head, a lot of little sharks. The trout bite's been really, really good. The pinfish will destroy you there, and the puffer fish are absolutely terrifying down there, but still fun.
They're getting terrifying everywhere.
Yeah, puffer fish have been crazy the last while, especially from there going up the east side. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, you get this time of year when you start to get a lot of those puffer fish in, it's amazing how many guys come in and tell you, oh, this soft plastic's defective, the tails keep falling off, you know, and they don't realize that it's being eaten off by a puffer fish because you almost never hook the little guys. You know, even a decent, you know, decent-sized puffer fish, you hardly ever hook them, so you don't know what it is. You just all of a sudden reel up your soft plastics and your tail is gone. Especially if the guys are using like a chartreuse or an orange, some opposite colored tail on their plastics. They just, they love to bite it right off.
It's defensive. It's when you start seeing them eating the chartreuse and the orange and the bright colors, it's defensive. That's usually a male puffer fish guarding his territory. We're coming into their breeding season. So they do not like other males in their territory. If you start using the orange and white popping corks, just watch. Here in a few months, they'll start picking and hitting those because it looks like the underneath of another male puffer fish. Turn those puffer fish over. What color are they? White and orange.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm not going to go defensive. I'm going to go aggressive attack behavior.
Sure.
Yes. right. Now,
makes sense, I guess.
All right. If you're coming around, Matt Lachey, I've been hearing a lot of good redfish reports up and down through that whole, let's call it the Straits of Matt Lachey.
Right. The redfish have been mainly the key focus for everybody down there. Been a few trout, a few incidental juvenile tarpon, especially over there by the Cape Coral Canal area. But the redfish have been the main focus for everybody. You know, they're just catching them of all assorted sizes. You know, nothing, you know, the ones that they're getting into that are really big are way over the slot. They're like in that 30 to 33 inch range. But you're not finding a lot in that upper slot. You're either going from like that 17 to 22, 23 inch range, and then it skips right over into that 30 to 33 inch range. But definitely good numbers of them, and they're hitting a variety of stuff. I mean, pinfish, white bait, cut bait, shrimp. I mean, a lot of artificials are working good on them. Well, they're just not focused on one specific thing.
I can honestly tell you, Carl posted a couple pictures of some redfish. Beautiful redfish.
Boy, they've been eating good, haven't they?
I mean, just big fat redfish.
They look like me in a red suit.
Pink Rockport Rattler jig head and with a live shrimp on it. And he's bottom bouncing them. And oh my goodness, it's some amazing redfish. But the Rockport Rattler jig head, that pink one, really seems to be on fire. I don't know what it is. It could be just where Carl's throwing it and how he's throwing it. But I mean, boy, those are some fat fish.
He swears by that pink, and I've been trying to take another color out, see if it works just as good, and he won't do it.
Oh, I'm in here. I'm talking to customers. I said, well, I'm looking for, you know, this Rockport Rattler one. He goes, well, I might have some. You might have some? He took two boxes.
He's been chipmunking them away.
He's got them. I said, Carl, don't those actually belong to, like, me? You know, have you paid for them? Well, no. You know, I mean, it's like, give me a break. Put them on the wall. I want to make money on these.
Right, exactly.
Oh, gosh. I will order you more, Carl. He's so afraid he's not going to have that jig head for on his charters that, you know, it's. I'm going to have to put locks on those pink jig head things, so that we can keep Carl off of them. So anyway, but coming up on the east side, what's been going on?
East side's been doing pretty well.
How about Two Pines up to Burnt Store? Anybody got anything on that? Pompano outside of the bar. That I know I've been hearing some
Pompano
nice reports outside of the bar.
A lot of little sharks.
Yeah.
A whole lot of little sharks. Bonnet heads, black nose, sharp nose, oddball black tip. A good amount of little sharks out there in that, 4 to 8 feet of water range. Very, very good numbers of them. There's been an influx of little silver trout down in there, too, while those guys have been out there drifting around trying to fish for the sharks or catching the silver trout in addition to them. And then as you move up closer to the bars there, that's where your heavier numbers of pompano, a few trout, a few oddball sheep's head cruising on top of that bar. And then the redfish have been kind of scattered up along the mangroves all the way out to the edge of the bar. The reds there, they're spooky. You can get them, but you got to really work it very, very slow. The wade fishermen are by far doing the best bet with the redfish down in that particular little stretch, just because I think it's mainly because of the boat traffic that comes through there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Guy just said with the weather all over the place, it's been killing the fish happiness for me. I love how people phrase some of this stuff. I think it's amazing. But I've just been checking to see what's been going on out in the world, trying to add to the little bit of, information to the stuff. Like I say, Goliath, Red Grouper, all that stuff offshore, that's, I think, the biggest thing I see on going on right now.
Well, we had a couple nice days.
Still some nice jacks around the harbor, which surprises me.
Right.
How many nice jacks there are. And the jacks have figured out if they stay in the canals, they don't get netted up.
Right. Exactly. I was going to say, we don't want to talk about it too much because the netters will be in here having a good time, but at least they're smart enough to stay in the canals, especially on the other side where they can't go into with their nets.
But when you, every once in a while, a group will break out and run down that east side. They'll come out of ponds and they'll just boil down the east side of the harbor. I mean, just wrecking fish along that bar, and get down to about Burnt Store, Two Pines, turn around and come back north. And so if you miss them going south, wait a little while, in about an hour or so, they will be back. And they're just monsters in tackle wrecking fish. I mean, they will just destroy the drags and like Shimano's and stuff like that, you know. Well, it's not hard to do. you know, hey, what can I say? Yeah, toss a bomb right into them. Well, give me something besides felt, and I'll change my opinion. Let's see.
From Burnt Store, working our way up towards Alligator Creek. I know Cale's been over there quite a bit, so he can probably get better.
Yeah, I've been living over there. Good numbers of trout. Not as great as they were a few months ago, but still plenty of trout out there. They're starting to split up into their school sizes like they normally do. So you do have to move around to really find the quality trout, and you're going to pick through a bunch of little guys to do it.
I'm moving the boat so we can find more trout.
We're drifting?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. It's a lot of hull slap.
Well, you know, what can I say? Boat ride's good, it's just not quiet. Did anybody have to go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
What's the matter, Cale? Got you there?
A little bit.
I thought we were going to have to call a plumber.
I got a pee.
It's like whitewater rafting. I don't think that was drifting.
Just throw out the drift sock. We're moving too fast.
Right?
Oh, for all you, we did find a good buy in some drift socks. If you're looking for drift socks, we will have them soon. I found another deal on drift socks, so we will have them back at close to what we were able to get the last time I bought another. I found another few boxes of closeouts. So
did you?
Yeah, so the drift socks, we'll have them back in a reasonable price range instead of that $100 and some dollars. So if you know somebody looking for a drift sock, it'll probably be in the next week or so. It's not like I can just call the supplier and say, hey, send them to me. I had to find them, make the buy, and now they're shipping them. But we did find more drift socks.
You can't order something on a Saturday and it's here on a Monday?
Well, that's not even it. If it's, you know, basically finding them that were the retail. I mean,
I know they're expensive.
Unbelievable.
That last batch we got in, we got such a great deal on them that we were able to turn it over to everybody else, and it worked out phenomenal. But they're just
kinda
so hard to find.
They're starting to make them out of.
Yeah, platinum canvas or something.
I don't know.
So anyway,
other than the trout, there's been a few permit in behind or pompano behind the bar. There's been some flounder here and there behind the bar. Haven't seen the cobia out there anymore. They seem to have moved off. But lots of bonnet heads and lots of black nose. Or I'm sorry, sharp nose sharks in behind the bar. The key to that is to watch the birds. If you sit down between Redfish Key and Pirate Harbor, you'll see the white pelicans, the brown pelicans, the least terns out there. And they all seem to be doing nothing. And then all of a sudden they just come together and start feeding on the surface of the water. The ospreys move up to the top and start looking. Get into those birds, because chances are that's where those sharp-nosed shark are. They're down there tearing something up, and they're putting on a feeding frenzy, and the birds are taking advantage of that.
Cool. So, anyway.
As you move on the outside of the bar, though, towards those, like the the Pirate Harbor hole, moving your way up towards Alligator Creek, there's been scattered sharks, scattered Spanish mackerel, bluefish, been a lot of silver trout too throughout there. And that lower 20-foot hole, the Pirate Harbor hole, have had some decent silver trout mixed in there with them.
Now, one of the things Cale mentioned, the pompano, and kind of hit permit and backed off a little bit. But
Permito.
If you catch them in the harbor, they're harder to identify, because once they're up in the harbor for a while, the tannic water, the brown in the water, kind of gives them all the same color look.
Yep.
If you catch them out in the Gulf, the color patterns are very distinctly different, but up in the harbor they can be very, very similar, very hard to associate which one's which. The pompano is the ones where the fins are offset. The dorsal fin and the anal fin don't line up. The permit, you get a permit if you're in line. You get a pompano if you're out of line. if right. the top fin and the bottom fin are in pretty much the same placement from the nose back, that's a permit. So if you're in line, you get a permit. If you're out of line, you get a pompano. And the bottom fin or anal fin, pec fin, whatever it is, down on the bottom is whatever I just said.
It's in line.
Okay. So anyway, Alligator Creek, because the mouth of Alligator Creek, since they straightened out the channel coming out of Alligator Creek, holding a lot of pompano. So
pompano and a lot of trout.
Right.
Right.
Can so I go on a 30-second tangent here about Alligator Creek?
Go right ahead.
All these guys that are anchored up in there, they want to anchor everywhere and block everything. That's fine. But don't give everyone a dirty look when you park in the middle of the freeway.
Yeah, if you're anchored in the middle...
If you've got people idling through to get in and out of an area that are coming or going, don't give anyone a dirty look or throw your hands up in the air because they disturbed you or your anchor line or your lure or anything like that. You're the one that picked that spot and were like the rest of the lemmings jumping off the cliff with the 40 other guys in the way. Don't give people dirty looks or get attitudes towards the other boaters that are just trying to navigate through there. It's totally unfair.
And, I mean, I honestly can tell you, 20 years ago, I was anchored fishing, catching fish in a spot, and a guy come roaring through with his boat, and I'm acting like an idiot, jumping up and down, flipped him off, and was everything. And he looked at me and said, "Where the heck else am I supposed to go?"
Exactly.
And I looked and I felt so small, so stupid. It still bothers me to this day. I was that much of a jerk. I mean, I can be a real jerk, but petty is not usually part of my normal jerkism. And how stupid was it of me to think that you're in a narrow area, there's nowhere else for the other boats to go. Why should he go a mile out of his way? Or in the case of Alligator Creek, there is absolutely nowhere else to go. I'm blocking the way for people to get in and out, but yet I think I own that?
Right.
God, that's... What a low-down, stupid, petty, ridiculous thing to do. And I was guilty of it. And I'm not kidding when I say it still bothers me to this day. That was 20-some years ago, young and stupid, but I still cringe about that when I think how horrible that was of me to do that.
And don't forget that... Alligator Creek's a high-speed channel.
Yeah, you're allowed to run in plane. If they want to come by you...
You know, when you're in your little John boat and you're anchored in the middle of the channel, don't give that guy dirty looks when he comes by you at 30 miles an hour.
No.
Plus, I would rather have him come by me at 30 miles an hour than
I would
it way down and then throw up a big old bow wake on me.
What I like is...
you putting up signs.
Where all of a sudden, here they're coming along, you're on plane. Now, the wave's going to hit me hard, but it's not going to be very big.
Right.
But all of a sudden, the guy is trying to be nice, so he backs it all the way down, and the back of the boat sinks about 3 feet into the water. And now, that wave is not going much slower at all, but it's now 3.5-4 feet.
Rogue wave.
Rogue wave. Going to die here. We're tipping over the Poseidon. All right, go ahead, guys.
Alligator Creek has been kind of hit or miss. Yeah. I've been working it on the outgoing tides first thing in the morning. I spend either 2 minutes there or 2 hours. No in between. I get out there, I throw out some shrimp. If all you're getting is that little peck, 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 well, then it's full of puffer fish, move someplace else. Other days, we can sit there for hours and pull trout out one after another, and most of them have been good size.
Right. The other thing that's been coming through there has been some bluefish, you know, some incidental bluefish. Was it you that showed me the picture of the big bluefish that you caught there the other day?
No.
Somebody showed me a picture. It was like about a 5 or 6 pound bluefish. I mean, it was a big bluefish.
Wow.
I mean, it was very, very surprising, but I've had other guys tell me about some of the bluefish that they've been catching throughout there. Definitely not consistent numbers, but don't be surprised when you're getting them. Been a few flounder along the edges there, especially up closer towards the mangroves. Redfish, oddball, little black drum.
We caught a couple flounder in there the other day, small. Mm-hmm. One was about 11 inches, the other one was about 4.
Yeah, nice.
That's cute.
Yeah, is that a flounder? Or is it one of the hog chokers?
I don't know. All I know is what we call them.
Yeah. Hey, but There's also been some jacks, you know, in there too.
Which one of the, you know, who always plays those
games? Your mic is off.
Okay.
There we go.
Terry's at it again.
Terry's at it again?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You know, she plays all those things.
Yeah.
She's at it again.
She's on a roll?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Oh.
That's good stuff. All right. Going up into the PGI canals, have you been up in there at all?
Yeah. Lots of jacks.
Yeah.
Lots of
big jacks.
Big jacks up in there. Few redfish, not too many, some snapper. Most of the snapper I've been getting on the troll.
Right.
I would rather troll for them just because you usually get better quality snapper when you troll.
Right.
It's not going to be the little guys.
Right. I've been hearing of a few redfish, but the guys that have been catching them have actually been bass fishing for them. They're actually working jigs almost vertical along the docks and along the mangrove, along the rim canal.
Wouldn't surprise
working
me at all.
Working them real, real slow, but getting some better fish.
We've been getting some trout on the troll,
Richard's
too.
Been back in there a lot and just vertical fishing on really, really whacking them good, but working very, very, very slow. You know, and I think that's the key thing is to work it real slow back in there.
Yeah, definitely.
I know a lot of juvenile tarpon back in there, but they've been super spotty and moving around just like the snook.
Well, it's much easier to catch first thing in the morning,
right
before the sun comes up and right after the sun sets, and that's when most people don't fish here.
Right, exactly. It's time to go home.
Oh, yeah. She's excited. Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
You're excited, too.
Oh, well, you know, hey.
That's because she's stoked. It's hard to not get excited when someone else is excited.
You know, we happen to live together. We do share these things. So, you know, it's not all bad. It's not life-changing, but it's fun. It's the most she's ever won, so it's
nice.
Really cool.
Cool.
So you guys are talking about PGI. I can tell. A lot of small tarpon, quarter-ounce rattle traps, the black chartreuse. And if you want to meet the guy who makes the lures, March 14th, Wes will be here. Rattle trap.
Great.
Yep, you can come down and see Wes throwing rattle traps in a casting tank right here in the parking lot, along with Mark Nichols, Eric Bochnick.
Coolest thing about the rattle traps in the casting tanks, when he's doing that show, put your hand on the side of the casting tank, and you can actually feel the rattle from the rattle trap.
Depending on which tank I buy. I've got to buy some... it can only be about 10 feet, but it's going to be deeper. So
right.
I think I'm going to have to buy a regular cattle trough for that one. One of the galvanized cattle troughs.
Sure. Oh, that'll transmit it even better.
Yeah, because I'm not going to be able to do the regular cattle troughs like we have for, like, the mirror lure. It works perfectly. The DOAs work perfectly in those other tanks, the Rapalas. But I think I'm going to have to get a regular 2-foot deep cattle trough for that. And hopefully it's going to be bright and sunny, because then we'll paint the inside white and you should be able to see everything really nicely.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because the galvanized, I don't think you're going to get to be able to see with it. We're going to have to shoot it all white. So, but yeah, that's going to be a pretty cool effect with the rattle trap in it. So,
nice.
Anyway, sorry about that. What else was going on? Where were we at?
We're just leaving out of the PGI canals and pretty much about to wrap it up. The only thing we forgot about was the Alligator Creek Reef.
Yeah, Cape Hayes Reef, Alligator Creek Reef, going on the middle, Marker 5, Spanish Mackerel, Pompano. Anything going on? We talked a while back. There was some kind of cool stuff at the Cape Hayes Reef.
Yeah, the Cape Hayes Reef had some Spanish mackerel on it, some bluefish, sheep's head, mangrove snapper, a few incidental gags, some Goliath / Jewfish. Been a lot of little mix of sharks out there, too. You know, the black nose, the sharp nose, and the bonnet heads. The bonnethead's kind of weird because they, you know, for the longest time they've been on the flats, real good numbers, but now they've actually popped back out in the middle of the harbor too. So you're catching them in both places. But it seems like when they move out into that middle of the harbor, they start to take cut bait a little bit more often than they do the shrimp, versus when they're on the flats, they really get focused on those shrimp more than anything else.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little odd.
I think that's their breeding ritual.
No, they're already done breeding. They're just probably building up all the stuff for their pups.
Yeah.
I mean, the females are pregnant. They're trying to eat to support the babies and stuff.
Yeah, right. They were all up in the shallows. That's when they're usually doing their thing. And then they kind of move out.
Yeah.
I think it's better food out there this time of year.
Yeah.
They're building up for that.
It's
and
like
then they come back in.
Those idiots talking about killing all the sharks.
Oh,
I mean, oh my God, how stupid are they? Sharks in decline all over the world and everywhere else, but because the sharks, it's like yelling at a carpenter because he's hitting a nail with a hammer.
Right.
I liken this to the people that move next to an airport and then complain about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're that level of stupid.
We have a nice park in my neighborhood, and there's all kinds of stuff there. And an older couple bought a house there and then literally tried to get the park closed because they didn't want kids in it because it was too noisy for their house.
Yep.
If you buy a house next to a park or an airport, what do you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
And
there was
these guys
actually a town
who
in
complaining
Montana.
About the bull sharks and these other sharks, I'm sorry, it's their job.
It's crazy. Right. There was actually a town in Montana that got tired of the residents complaining about the airport. So what the town of Montana did was say, fine, we're going to make this area a noise pollution area, and it's going to show on your deed. So how are you going to sell your house when you're in a noise pollution area? And the entire town shut up.
Well, I don't know. I just, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
They're eating my tarp and kill them.
Yeah, eating my tarp and kill them. Uh-huh. What are you doing with them? You're killing them, you jerks. Anyway, to go back, I don't think there's anything we haven't covered today.
Nope.
If this was a normal radio broadcast, I mean, we went really ridiculously long today. We're pushing an hour and a half. And then you have to add 25 minutes for commercial time, if we did commercials. You know, really, it's over a two-hour program.
Well, we had commercials. We went off on different tangents and little random spots throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. About the tent sale, I mean, so we get them in.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's just like
we take care of our sponsors.
You know, when we were doing the national show, I mean, oh my God, that was ridiculous. We sat there for an hour doing the show, and literally we had less than 20 minutes of actual airtime.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Why would you even want to do a show like that? That's why we don't do the national show anymore. And it's funny because I forget, we're in, what, 9, 10 states, 11 states, and all these cities and stuff. And
I wonder what that sounded like on the radio. Commercial. Commercial.
Yeah. So anyway, we are going to say thank you guys very much for listening. And Fish and Frank in the chair here. I got Robert in the chair across from me. And Captain Kale is our
special guest.
Guest appearance today.
Now, is that special or special short bus?
We're just...
Depends on the day.
I'm going to say minute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know.
He went there.
He did. I figured he would.
What, you thought it wasn't?
You have to check his temperature.
If you open a door around here, somebody's going to shut it.
So, anyway, we really appreciate that, you guys listening. And keep in mind, March 14th, literally, it's the best.
Most amazing thing to experience besides actually catching fish.
Yeah.
I think that's the hardest part about the tent sale, is finding words to describe it.
The hard part about it is it doesn't exist anywhere else. It's not like any other event.
Yep.
It's a literal buying show where, and I don't want to say it this way, but I don't know how else to say it. You get to be Fish and Frank or Robert for the day. You get to come in and deal with the factory themselves and literally discuss what you're buying with the people who make it. And
well,
in the case of
the
lure companies, you get to actually see them use it. They say, well, I really like this lure. I've always wanted to use it, but how do I work it? What's the proper way? And they can show you a tank right there for it. And nothing else exists like this. And it's in our dopey tents and our dopey 2x4 and pegboard walls. And it's not like when you go to these major shows where they have all these beautiful booths and stuff. We take, you know, 2x4s and we slap some pegboard on it. We put the products up. And it is a Fish and Frank event.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about that. But nothing else exists like it anywhere. And we are so amazed and that it all works.
Right.
That it all came together and it's actually working. And it's the only place, the only time where you get to experience what we experience, and that's what we truly wanted. That was Robert and I, our original vision years ago when we started doing this, and it's all worked out, and
I think it's gone over beyond working out. I mean, I figured it was going to work, but holy mackerel.
Yeah, I mean,
to get the people that we've gotten to come, to get these manufacturers to make the time, because it is the busy time of the year for them, too. You know, they've got to go to the big
deal. They've got their ICAST.
They've got their big dealer shows that they've got to go to.
Gary Loomis flies in from Washington State. Charles and Vicky fly in from Texas. Penn comes down from South Carolina. Sean from
AFW. South Carolina and Kansas, I think.
In Kansas, yeah. And then Sean from American Fishing Wire, he comes from Pennsylvania. Yeah. Wes is coming from Louisiana. I mean, we have people coming, major manufacturers, owners, representatives from all over the U.S.
Well, and I don't know where the family Rapala lives.
That's Minnesota, right?
That's where their main office is. But
that's where they're coming from.
But is that where the family actually lives?
No, one of them's coming into the U.S.
Right.
And then I can't remember the guy's name. One of the nicest people you ever meet, that guy, the national sales manager from Rapala. I can't remember his name.
Yeah,
I went fishing with him one day, and I went to say his name, drew a blank, but really, I mean, amazing people. But he's coming down from Minnesota, I think it is. Isn't it Minnesota?
Yeah, it's Minnesota.
They're coming down from Minnesota, and
it's cold up there. I don't blame
you. Yeah, I don't think it's too much of an arm twist to get the guys from Minnesota and Pennsylvania down here this time.
The other ones, you know.
It's just that coordinating it and to get all them to come here when it is literally their busiest time of the year, too, with them traveling all over the U.S. for literal big trade shows that they have to do. So it's amazing to get them here, but the coolest part is it's not only get to watch them work the lure and teach you about the lure, but because they are at the actual warehouses or manufacturing facility, you can actually ask them questions like, how do you really build this? Because I mean, let's face it, a lot of these lures, you just look at them and use them, but some of them you actually kind of want to know what goes into making them, just for curiosity purposes.
It astounds me.
So you can actually ask them, hey, you know, is this mold injected? Is this through wire? How do you do this? How does this hold up? How do you get the colors to stay in there? What's up with the broken glass? You can actually ask some really cool questions if you're just fascinated with the makeup of the stuff, let alone how it catches fish.
Yeah, it's amazing, but it's... the truth of the matter is, you know... fact, I am influential and powerful enough in the industry, just as the owner of this crazy little store, to get them to come here once. But I by no means have the influence to get them to do it a second time.
Right.
That it just goes beyond my scope. The only ones who have that type of power are our customers, the clients that come in, the people that come in the door, the people who attend the tent sale. They ask good questions. They're not whiny. They're just really, really amazing people who just...
they want to buy it and they want to learn about it and have a good time and use it.
And that's what no one can understand. How we've found so many people that ask intelligent questions, want to know the product, want to get a good deal, and buy something and really understand the whole thing. That's what none of these factories can figure out, how we found these people. And we did. We have the most amazing customers in the world. They're the best part of our day. I mean, when the customers come in, that's when this store is fun.
Absolutely.
When there's no customers here, let's face it, this job is not that great. You know, we have bait tanks to clean, floors to mop, you know, paperwork to do, shelves to dust, packages to clean, and... the customers are the most amazing part of the day.
Absolutely.
And to be able to show how cool our customers are to all these factories, and that's where we get our buying power. That's why our prices are so good. We have this amazing power of the factories understand who we're selling to, and they want to help us do that. And it has worked out great. And this is way too long-winded, so we will catch you guys on the next Radio Fishing. We'll see you later. Thank you.